I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by banging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the first proper episode of 2024. We've all got to get used to putting that four now, haven't we? Scrubbing out the three and adding a four. So yeah, last week's episode was just a rundown of every guest that we've had on the podcast throughout 2023. All absolutely amazing in their own right. And if you've got anyone you think you might like to have guest on the podcast this year, just get in touch. The easiest way to do so is via Instagram, which is ministryofarts.org, or myself personally, Mizogart, MIZOGART. And as is our tagline, we are possibly the most accessible art podcast in the world. So wherever the artist is on the rung of the artistic ladder, we do not care. We're just after the story behind the artist that creates the work. But straight in with episode 242, Sarah Prinsloo. I've known of Sarah's work for some time. I knew she had an amazing story, and I knew she was a big advocate for art in the working classes. Both Sarah and I, in this episode, ask each other a lot of questions about our position within the working class status, if you like. And I think at some points in this conversation, we even unravel a few things about ourselves that we didn't even know in the first place. We make a few little discoveries about our own personality. But yeah, this episode is an ideal episode to kick off the new year. I'm going to keep this intro short. So please let me introduce you to Miss Sarah Prinsloo.
Hello. Ooh.
Hello. Yeah.
That was funny. Oh, how's things? You good?
Not bad now. How are you today? God. You good?
I'm good. Yeah, I've been running around like crazy this morning. Just jumped out the shower, so my hair's still wet, but yeah.
Oh, bless. That looks like a good room you're in.
my artwork that I collect, all my friends and stuff, I like to buy a piece of artwork off most of them. So that's kind of the wall we bang it on. But yeah.
Yeah, nice. Sarah Prinsley, there is several questions I ask each guest. And the first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that didn't know your work?
Okay. I would describe my artwork as a self-reflected body of work. It's me trying to understand who I am and visually representing that through a whole variety of work from 2D to 3D. I explore mental health, grief. I also dive into kind of being a working class artist and the issues that that may bring up, not as an artist, just as a working class person, kind of being skint and growing up in an environment where, you know, it's a little bit tougher and I feel like you have to fight that little bit harder to break through in the art world. But also the problematic issues that that brings up, like alcohol and drugs has been a big one for me. How that in turn may impact how you deal with certain situations like grief, like trauma. I know for me personally, I kind of always go straight back into self-destructive mode, drink, all that kind of thing. And it's really unhealthy. And I guess my artwork is just trying to figure out these points in my life of what makes me turn to certain reckless kind of attitudes. And does that have something to do with being working class? Is that a massive part of it? I feel like it is personally. But my artwork uses a lot of text. I get influenced a lot from music, films. They're probably my biggest influence more than artwork. And I know that that sounds terrible, but it seems to be this emotional connection I have with words. And I love the fact that music brings you a video image along with sound and how those two things together can provoke so much emotion to a person. And I guess that's probably why I like film as well. It's a similar thing. So yeah, I guess it's massively to do with emotions and me trying to sort my head out.
Other than the drink and drugs, yeah, that sounded like my own bio. And with your drink and drugs, was that just overuse or was it addiction of either?
I think it was overuse. There were times it got a little bit scary and dark. I would say I used it regularly when I was younger. I started from a really early age. I think I was about 16 and you know, I smoked crack. Like it's horrendous now when I look back on it. You know, I think I've got my own kids and I'm trying to bring them up and they're not much younger than my age when I was a complete disaster. But I mean, I stopped when I started a relationship with my husband and then had children. So, you know, it wasn't an addiction that I had to seek help for at all, but it was just something I did on a regular basis.
Now, you just said there that there was two things that made you stop: meeting your husband and having children. Did you stop when you met him, or was it when you had children, or a bit of both?
It was when I had children.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And he had two older children, so I knew it was coming. I knew I had to control that at some point, you know, but I still was partying pretty hard at that point, yeah, when I met him. But I knew it was something that I had to do at some point.
Yeah. And was he the type of person who would use that lifestyle as well?
Yes and no. So weekends, but he never had that extreme that I have, where I was always the person that went over the top.
Oh, so he sort of let his hair down and you...
I just went stupid.
And yeah, so he was the one trying to rein you in most weekends, I presume.
Yeah, And it's still like that, even though there's not drinking drugs about, it's still, you know, he has to rein me in quite often. I think it's my personality. I've just got that personality where I hit things really hard. I go to the extreme, for sure. And I think it helps with my confidence as well, or the drinking drugs and stuff like that. Yeah.
And as you say, it's where you're very probably a strong emotional person, and them emotions are a little bit too strong for you to handle. So you do need an outlet for them. Yeah, I've been there myself. So where was growing up?
So I grew up in a little village called Hadfield. It's on the outskirts of Manchester. I wouldn't say it held many opportunities for kids my age. I visit back there now. I'm in Sheffield now, so I'm only about 45 minutes away. And I go back and, you know, a lot of the people my age that have now grown up, there's people that are still on it. There's people that are coming out of rehab. You know, it seems to be one of those villages where there's a lot of drugs. And I think people underestimate villages sometimes. You know, it's a short little trip from Manchester, but it's a beautiful place. You can see all the Peak District from there. It's gorgeous, but I think it does have its troubles. Ooh, my headphones are just falling out.
But the thing with the village life is, as you say, it's as rife there per capita as it is in the city. But it's mainly down to boredom and lack of anything for the kids to do, you know?
100%. The youth centres have shut there, you know, the support for the community. Pubs are shutting. Pubs, I see pubs as kind of like a youth centre for adults. They're somewhere where you can, like, just vent yourself. You could go there. I've always been a person who's been in pubs. I've worked in pubs. I love the pub life. I love the characters you meet there and the conversations are incredible sometimes. And it was funny, where we used to go to the pub and where I used to work, Shaw Ryder from the Happy Mondays used to live around the corner. So he used to come in quite a lot. And this was before he sorted himself out. So he was still a bit of a nutter. And he used to come in and cause chaos. I remember once he tried to fly kick the barmaid once. It was crazy, but lots of characters, but lots of really talented people as well. Yeah. Lots of musicians, you know, when it's a lock in the evening, people would get the guitars out, fiddles out, whatever. But they're not like that anymore. They died down.
Yeah.
You know, I go in the same pub now and it's dead. And you're just like, all the characters gone, you know?
Yeah, they've sort of divided and conquered the government, haven't they, on the socialising front.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
Was there creativity in the home growing up?
Oh, bags of it.
Brilliant.
So my dad was in a band, musician. He plays bass, he plays acoustic. My mum, her house is crazy. If you walk into it, it's kind of like an Aladdin's cave. There's just artwork everywhere. There was always, I can remember growing up as a kid, that she always used to have pictures of Renaissance paintings all over the place. She used to like quiz us on them and ask us questions growing up. But when I was younger, my mum had some serious mental health issues. So she used to go to this art therapy session once a week. And she used to come back with these most crazy paintings ever. They were really dark and, oh, God, I remember being quite scared of them. But they helped. The art therapy helped her a lot. And my dad's kind of always been good at, like, graphic design sort of aspects of things. He used to work in a print centre, but it was when the print centres were, like, metal letters that he used to stamp. And I used to be fascinated by the whole process of it, you know, laying out all the letters. You can't delete. There's no, you know, you've got one chance to get it right. I was always fascinated by that. Yeah, but a very creative house for sure. I'm thankful for them for that. I feel like they've gifted me some creative outlook on life. We're all a very emotional family and really outspoken with our emotions as well. Yeah. I think that's where I get it from.
And was there siblings?
Yep, so older sister, Candy, and two younger, a brother and sister. So there was a 10-year age gap. So me and my older sister were like best mates, really close. And we could find it in each other. I moved out of home at 16. I was at her house all the time. She was pregnant really young, so I used to help with a kid and all that type of thing. And then by the time I moved to London, my brother and sister were real little and growing up then, so I kind of missed out on them growing up.
At what age did you go down to London?
22, I think. I got a place at St. Martin's, Byamshire.
Oh, nice.
My college teacher said to me, "Oh, why don't you apply for university?" And I can remember being like, "What? People like us don't go to uni. Like, why would I go to uni? I'm skint. I haven't got any money." Like, yeah. And then she was like, "No, you get a student loan." And it's like this whole world had opened up. I was like, "What? You get a student loan? Oh my God. Yeah, of course I'm going to do that." So I applied, but I deferred my place a year because I wanted to go traveling. So I thought, oh, they won't accept me because they think I'm taking the piss because I want to defer it. So in my head, I was thinking I'll do the interview again next year. Yeah. But I got the place. So I was just like, fucking hell.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I was buzzing. But I remember it being a huge culture shock.
Coming to London or going to uni or both?
Both, 100% both. So, you know, I'd never really been around people of wealth before. That was a huge shock. I had a lot of arguments with the girls. There was a lot of people I didn't like there. I remember getting into some scraps, pissed up and just being a complete idiot, basically.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't take my education seriously or my studies seriously because I was too busy trying to figure out what this new environment was in and feeling really self-conscious and feeling really crap about myself because I felt like I've got to prove myself more than anybody else because I'm common and I'm working class and I'm not as well educated as these other people. So I found my friends once I was there. I found a little crew of people. And interestingly enough, we all had different backgrounds, whether they were wealthier or not. But it was just people that didn't look down on me, that made me feel comfortable around them. And they're some of my best mates and I love them and I still go to see them. You know, they're the most amazing people ever.
Now, on reflection, Sarah, do you think that was the case? Or did you just have a chip on your shoulder?
Definitely a huge chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Definitely. Angry. And anger comes up in my work a lot. And this all then turns into the reckless behaviour because I feel intimidated by it. I feel unworthy. It makes me just feel this big, and I still have that to this day, and it's this thing I'm trying to work through. And I watched this show the other day, a live show by Grayson Perry, and it was a show all about you, and he was talking about like trying to figure out who you are and all these different things. But he said this one thing, he was like, going angry come out happy. And I was thinking about it for ages and I thought, God, I'm still so somewhere in the middle. I wish I could be like look so positive on things now, but I still have this little niggling chip on my shoulder that I just can't get rid of, and I feel dead guilty about it.
Right, now would you say that you can't get rid of it or you don't want to let it go?
Ooh, yeah, that's interesting. I guess it's who I am. I guess that chip on my shoulder is who I am. And maybe if I didn't have that chip on my shoulder, I wouldn't have anything to say in my artwork as well.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? See, I work in education and I work at a university. And
you're
I
tech,
feel
right?
A technician, yeah. Yeah, so technician for architecture students. So
right,
it's like
they were always the in-between, weren't they, for the tutor? They were like the shop steward for the student and the tutor. They were the in-betweens.
Yeah, and I feel like technicians, deserve to be valued a little bit more, because it's a lot of the time that they spend more time with the students actually, you know, trying to figure things out and create things or whatnot. So I used to be a technician in a college in an art department, but now I'm in Sheffield University in the architecture department. Yeah, I feel at a technician level as well. I feel comfortable as a technician. I gave teaching a go for a little while and it just didn't feel right with me. I didn't feel worthy of that position.
That's your fucking chip on your shoulder, isn't it? Holding you back. Mine's exactly the same.
Holds me back all the time. In what sense does it hold you back, do you think?
Pretty much the same as what you're saying. You are worthy of being that tutor. But you don't think you are. You think you're getting above yourself, which is a fucking working class. Well, I'm presuming that's what you think. There's a working class thing where we're afraid that someone's going to go, oh, how are you getting above your station with your BA? Or have you got an MA?
I've got an MA, yeah.
Oh, how are you? I've only got a BA. All right, sitting there giving it the big one. But that's the attitude that we think we're going to get.
It's like you just talking about that ME, then getting an MA, and it's kind of like, yeah, MA.
Exactly. You're ashamed of it weird. Because it's not meant to be from someone. A working class person in a village ain't supposed to have that MA.
No. Working class need we need a healthy spotlight in the art world, don't we? And I especially think female working class artists, I think there's more male representation. I'd like to see a bit more female.
Well, the one that comes to mind for me all the time is Sarah Lucas.
Yeah,
because she was
for
just
sure.
No nonsense, no bullshit. If you don't like it, fuck off.
Yeah, she's great. You know, yeah,
she's
for
big,
sure.
She's bold, she's brash, and couldn't give a toss about anyone's opinion.
I love it. I love it. See, I wish I could not give a toss about everyone's opinions, but it's still the same.
But you don't. No, that's the thing, Sarah. From what I see about your work, you don't give a fuck about people's opinions, but you're so het up on your own opinion of yourself that you won't let yourself grow. And I'm exactly the same.
Ooh. Oh, it's like a therapy session, this, isn't it?
Oh, sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. It's good. It's good for sure.
Because the art world ain't holding your back, and posh people aren't holding your back. Educated people aren't holding your back. Yeah, it's you, isn't it? And I'm the same. I've started this podcast for many reasons. One of them was there wasn't enough voices of not Cockney or Southern or anything like that, but a working class voice and attitude mainly in the art world. I thought, well, if no one's going to do it, I'll do it. I won't make a big fucking song and dance out of it. But what I adore is when someone who feels like they can't be part of the art world because they come from a council estate or a one-parent family, but I can be that Malcolm Morley in my head, and they go, fucking hell, if that ex-criminal, Cockney, whatever, can have his own podcast and speak freely to someone at the bottom of the ladder or the top of the ladder,
then
that's for me, you know, that world can be for me.
And I guess it makes people kind of like myself more comfortable speaking to you right now and influenced by what you're doing as well. But yeah, definitely knowing that other people are achieving things like that then only builds this momentum for other people to have a go as well from working class backgrounds. Yeah, I've actually just wrote an essay. It should be coming out soon on my website. Not quite sure how I'm going to put it out there. But it's all like this self-reflective discussion of being working class, of like reckless behavior, anarchy, grief, all this sort of thing. And at the end, when I'm trying to sum things up, there's still all this anger, and I'm trying to discuss this anger, and I'm just like, oh, for God's sake, this anger's doing my head. And I feel like putting together a written piece of work, a body of written context is only empowered my artwork that I'm making as well, and kind of clarified to me what I'm trying to do in my head, and it's definitely made my work stronger.
Is that essay to inform other people of how you think, or is it for you to try and understand how you think?
It was both. So at first I was thinking, right, why are people actually going to look at my artwork? Like, so for instance, if you share a picture on Instagram, you post it and it's gone. People might see it, they'll forget about it next week or whatever. But people need to know the story and the reason, right? So I started kind of putting together a little written piece, but it was starting to be more like my life story. And then it transformed into something else. So I was like, you know what? It's almost like a sob story. I don't want this. Like, this is not what it's about. I found that it was always like negative, negative, negative. I was like, you know what? Scrap all this. I'm still going to have aspects of that in my written piece, but it's not going to be the forefront of it. The forefront is trying to analyze that behavior and why it may be there in the first place and how we can have healthy discussions about these things of working class and recklessness and whatnot. And then it just became really interesting. So I'm part of the Working Class Creative Database. They're absolutely amazing. They're just fantastic. They're a great bunch of people. Yeah, Working Class Creative Database. So you can submit to be put on their website as an artist and whatnot. But you join a WhatsApp group and they send you opportunities. They are, a lot of them are in London, but there's a few popping up in Leeds and Sheffield. But what it's great for, I wrote this essay. I'm not amazing at writing, never have been. You know, I messed up at school big time, so that doesn't help. But I sent a couple of people in there a copy and they read it. And they gave me so much insightful feedback that just made me think of things a little bit differently. So I grammar checked the whole thing. I was like, this is sick. I was like, wicked. But yeah, great bunch of people if you want to check them out. I did an exhibition with them in Archway, I think about 2 years ago. It was called Pure Class. And it was, the work there was outstanding. It was brilliant. We just managed to find an empty warehouse. And we put all the people who owned it let us use it for a week, and we put a load of work up, and it was brilliant. I think Jeremy Corbyn turned up as well.
Blinded.
It was ace, yeah.
Right, how do you define the word skint? Is it just no money, or is it poor?
I'm skint. What does that represent? I guess a big one for me personally, what it makes me, I guess it's different for different people. Skint is, it depends what kind of level you're at. You know, if you haven't got a job, being skint, I guess, would be a bit more drastic to what I feel skint is. So for me, paying my bills, for instance, is always a massive worry. When I get paid, I stress more than when I've got no money. Because as long as my bills are paid, like, I could do the rest of the month with no money. That's fine. As long as there's a bit of food in, it's all good. But when I have money, it stresses me out more. I don't like having it and trying to organise that. And, you know, have I got enough money to pay all my bills this month? Yeah, that causes a lot of anxiety. I am in a better place than I was, say, 10 years ago, but I've never been wealthy. I couldn't even imagine being wealthy. I'd probably go into another kind of mental state of guilt then, and I'd probably hate it because I'll feel really guilty. I don't think I could cope with it.
So a lottery win would push you over the edge, you reckon?
I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. It'd be nice to find out.
Yeah, of course. And what are you doing with the I'm Skint artwork? I saw it as a banner. It looked like a protest board, more or less, didn't it, you know?
That's exactly what it's supposed to be. So it's a whole series saying different things, and it's almost like they're a picket. They all relate to working class kind of backgrounds, but current times as well. So We're Fucked is the one that I'm kind of getting out there at the minute. But it was funny because I was in my garden and my son's taking a picture of me, and I'm there in a dressing gown and my sliders kind of holding the thing. But that's what I want it to be. I want it to be real life. I don't want to be like, brushing my hair and putting my makeup on to have it, because it's not what it's about. This is like raw, honest work. That's exact, and I have to represent that in the way that the work does as well. So he's taken a picture of me. And then what I've done is I've cut that out and I've been putting myself in different backgrounds.
Yeah.
So I kind of did the hospital. I've done, I did the supermarket, going on about kind of how pubs are shutting down and the whole thing with supermarkets and the cost of living and whatnot. But I'm finding it really interesting using these in, as soon as you put that piece of artwork in a different environment, it says it conveys a completely different message. Yeah, for sure. So I'm having fun playing around with it.
How would you be about taking just the I'm Skint banner and finding a protest and putting it amongst that?
I like that idea. I like it.
It's not you being put in that environment. It's your theory being put in that environment.
Yes. And I'm really getting into these Instagram reels at the minute. And this ties in with my love for visual imagery and music and how, you know, you make a reel on Instagram, you kind of got your video, but it doesn't really mean anything until the music goes with it, and then it turns into something else. So I've been like collaging all these different things in my reels that then tie in with what I'm trying to say. So it'll flash on every couple of seconds, me holding my side, saying, we're fucked, we're fucked, we're fucked. And then it'll be like the Sunak thing that he was saying, it was just absolutely ridiculous about the trans community and all this fucked up stuff that's happening, but then also little hints of me as a person in there as well. And it's almost making like, I really like them. I'm really getting into it. There's something about that kind of moving image and music and, yeah.
I asked your definition of skint earlier because, you know, we all put it down as just not enough money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, skint doesn't have to be financial. It could be morally skint, you know, like I see the conservatives of being completely poor in their moralistic outlook at society at the moment. So they could be skint of morals, although they've got, all the money that they want, you know?
Yeah, I like that. I really like that idea. Ooh, that's one of them that I'm going to sit there this evening and that's going to be turning in my head. And I'll probably be like, something else will be born out of that, I'm sure. Yeah, really, I really like that thought.
Well, which piece that you've created do you think has got the strongest emotional connection?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ooh. Oh, that's so hard. So I've got a whole new series that I've made and I'm slowly releasing those out to the world.
Which are? Or are they a secret?
They're pickets. So lots of the same A1 pickets. Got canvases. I've done this whole spin on Art Nouveau, classic, overpopulated kind of imagery. And I've dragged it through current times and turn these, I call them trashy ladies, into kind of aspects of myself, and they have subtle hints of like low social class status and kind of carrier bags and cheap cider and rats running around and things like that. I've really enjoyed them, but I think the pickets are really conveying what I'm all about. And it's so simple. It's that, like, their ink, it's just scrawled ink. But words have such a powerful reaction to me. If I hear something in a song, or if somebody said something that I really like, I'll home in on it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I'll get emotionally charged by those words. And as soon as you put those words onto a piece of paper, your audience may get a totally different idea of what your work is about. So it opens up this can of worms. So, like, oh, so musicians, such as the Idols, I've taken some words from them. I don't know if you know them. They're kind of like a punk-esque yeah. kind of work. They've done loads of songs about being working class, and they did Small Town Village, which I related to a lot. It's going on about, like, characters that you'll find in a pub, and it was kind of it kind of dumbed them down a bit, actually. So there's another band called Sleaford Mods, and their music's similar, but they accused the Idols of classism, because Jason from the Sleaford Mods was actually, hold on a minute, you're not even working class. And then it opened up this can of words. Everyone's like, oh, he's only working class. He's calling us stupid. So, like, the people that he was once rallying with turned against him in a way. It was just like, ooh. So you've got to be careful.
People were saying that about the Sex Pistols, Sarah, because
oh, you know, really?
A couple of those were very middle class, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So I guess it's this thing that if you're in the limelight, people are open to attack you for
of
things,
course,
aren't
yeah.
they, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it puts into context, like, it's really important how you deliver something. And I guess, you know, if you deliver it wrong, in the wrong context, it can have consequences. I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to say. And I guess that's where this written work comes in, to back up exactly who I am and what I'm trying to do. So I guess it's trying to deliver them in a way so people understand the message of what they are. So I'm Skint is probably the one that has a lot of ties with me personally. So I think that's one that I feel strongly about, but I feel like I have to explain it because it could be not understood. Not yeah. like, I don't know. Not really answering that question well, am I?
You're saying that you're Skint. I mean, if you found the actual definition in the dictionary of Skint and put I am and then the definition, it'd still say the same thing, but it'd appeal to a completely different person, wouldn't it?
It
so
would.
I've got to see what the definition of skin is in a dictionary.
Do it.
Because
I think it is a start of something. I think there's more to come from this. I feel like I'm only just beginning with it.
Because at the moment, you're looking from a working class perspective. You know, you're opening yourself up to the world to say, this is what I am. Or
yeah,
this is what
yeah.
people like me are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that might not necessarily be true. That might just be in there you think you're Skint, but you're possibly
yeah.
not, you know. I mean, your
Ooh.
Skint compared to someone else's Skint is a different thing altogether, isn't it?
Exactly.
Right, Skint definition. Having little or no money available.
I like that, yeah. What does it mean by available? You know what I mean? Does that mean extra?
I mean, taking it one step further is if you was to put I'm brassic, which is the slang for skint, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah.
That takes it one step even more into the working class realms.
Yes, I love it. I'd always say to my mates, they'd be like, oh, you're coming to the pub? And I'd be like, nah, I'm skint. And they'd be like, nah, come on. And you'll go, nah, I'm skint.
Yeah.
that means something completely different. That means you're on your ass.
Yeah.
Now a skint like that. Yeah. Now go, oh right, okay, no worries.
Yeah, and we all know what that is. Would you ever be able to let go of anger as an artist? Would you still be able to say as much if you wasn't as angry?
Because I feel like I want to let go of my anger. I feel like it is a huge hindrance. But then it also serves me something to talk about using creativity. But I'm sure if that anger wasn't there, I still have something to say. I've always got something to say.
Because I found talking about myself when I left uni and or when I started out as being an artist, I would talk about me being the prisoner. Then I don't know at what point it changed when I spoke about we are prisoners. And I, as I say, I don't know at what point that changed, but that felt like I'd grown up a little bit, you know.
Yeah, art changes and it grows and you discover all these different points in your life and how your behavior changes. And I remember someone saying to me once, they were like, why don't you just write something nice? And I was like, because I can't. Because I've got nothing nice to say, that's why. And I do feel like my recent body of work has highlighted just how negative I am or have been, but I do feel like it's changing. I do. And I can't say it's changing into something, like Grayson Perry said, something happy and nice. And I don't think it's changing into that. I think it's changing the way I think about things. You know, it's not all about me. It's about something way bigger than that. You know, yeah, I could go on about how I'm skint and I'm working class, but the issue is so much bigger, and that's where the discussion is. You know, there's other people in the same boat, and it's collectively together we share our experiences, but it flags up issues in society that maybe we need to discuss more.
Yeah.
There's so much to say, isn't there, at the moment about finances and class and money and whatnot. The country just seems to be fucked in a minute, doesn't it? It's just, I always worried about my kids and what the future is going to look like. And
well, if you don't mind me saying, there's fuck all you can do to change that. So
yeah, no, I've got no control over that.
Yeah, yeah, what will be, I'm afraid.
It's funny, I was having this conversation with my dad, actually. So I was going, talking about working class or whatever. He goes, I'm not working class. And I'm like, what? And I was dead confused. I'm like, what? But I've looked back on how our lives have changed, and especially my mum and dad's. So we were skint on a council estate. And me and my older sister had a totally different experience growing up as my younger siblings. And that was because of a few things. My granddad passed away at some point, and there was money left to the family and whatnot. So from that, my parents then bought a house, and it wasn't a council house. They moved off the council estate and bought a house. My dad at some point didn't work in a print factory or on a factory floor. He now is a director of a factory, and it's changed everything. And I, like, because I left home really early to escape, because
you
it
left
was just
home during
fucked.
The working class years.
Exactly. I was trying to escape home as much as possible because it was shit. It wasn't nice. You know, my mum was struggling. Like, you know, it wasn't a nice environment. We had lots of nice times. I don't want my mum to be listening to this. Like, yeah, great. But it was difficult. And because it isn't anymore, what I'm trying to say is, at what point does class change, and can it change? Can you change class? Because I've got a steady job now. Can I still say I'm working class? But I'm like, damn right I can. I know my roots. I know, like, who I am for sure. But my dad can't get his head around it. He's like, nah, I'm not working class. And I'm like,
wow.
We have so many rows about it. It's a funny old world when you're trying to categorize. I think because, you know, it used to be simple, didn't it? It used to be like, working class, middle class, upper class. But now, because of the internet age, jobs have changed.
Yeah.
You can be at home and be a YouTuber and earning thousands of pounds. And, you know, is it your job that defines your class? It, you know, I don't know.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's your attitude and your outlook.
Yes.
Because on my council estate, when I was a kid, there was people on there who would go to a theatre, who would have their kids come in and read. You know, that is a different outlook. And they were a bit different from the rest of us scallywags who were running around doing whatever we were doing, you know.
And it's funny you mentioned the theatre as well, how, you know, people went to the theatre and it was kind of different. When I went to watch the Grayson Perry thing at the theatre the other day, I bought two tickets. I couldn't find one person to come with me. So it's just like, right. So I went on my own. And I went straight after work, and I'm in my trackies, in my hoodie or whatever, queuing up, and everyone's all dressed up fancy, and I'm just on my own, like, okay. And I stood out like a sore thumb. This woman looked at me, like, not like she was scared, but like I was going to do something troublesome when I was just going to the bar to get a pint. I was thinking, oh, I don't know. It was weird. It was like she was a bit like, shook. I was thinking, fuck's sake, I'm 5'1" and I'm a, you know, I could do nothing.
If there was you and five other artists, Sarah, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh my god, right. Okay. Five artists. Harmony Corrine. He's a film director, but he also makes paintings. But I love his whole outlook on things. It's wacky, but it also, he looks at the lowest depths of society and kind of gives them a spotlight, but makes some humour out of it. So Harmony Corrine would have to be one. Francis Bacon, always loved Francis Bacon. He's amazing. Yeah. I love that most of his paintings were made when he was drunk. I just find that crazy. Goya, always been a huge fan of Goya. My favorite series would be Black Paintings. They're my favorite. It's got the kind of like creepy guy eating someone's head off. I love it. We went to Madrid to see them. They were some of my favorite pieces ever. And then, do you know what? I'd have Kurt Cobain in there. Even though he's a musician, I love his drawings. Really cool drawings. Like his journals, they made his journals kind of public. I love his work. And then one more. You've forgotten the wall. Do you know what? Did I say Lucian Freud?
No.
I didn't say Lucian Freud, didn't it? It's interesting, actually, because I've said a lot of classic painters there.
Who are all from wealthy backgrounds.
Yeah, and I kind of feel a bit ashamed now.
You've changed even through this fucking conversation, Sarah.
Oh, for God's
you've
sake.
Changed. Since you said about having an MA, you've gone all like posh on me.
I think because what those artists were that I named were some of the very first paintings that I actually saw in real life that got me interested in art in the first place before I knew anything about them.
And Bacon was one of those for me. You mentioned at the start that one of your foundations was grief. Is that grief from a passing?
My siblings, my sister, she passed away. So that has a lot to do with my work in terms of mental health. I've really had to get in tune with my mental well-being after that. Because it just completely fucked me up massively. All this anxiety stemmed from it, which was brand new to me. Never really been a person who had to deal with anxiety until all that happened. So I had to learn new things. I had to delve into the world of mental health to understand and try and figure out, you know, all these things, all these new emotions to me, why they were happening, you know. It was awful. It was awful for, yeah, it was 4 years ago, and I say the first 3 years I was a complete mess, for sure. Like, she was my best mate, you know what I mean? Like, literally.
Was it your older sister?
My oldest sister, yeah. And she's, you know, she's left her family behind. She's got kids and, you know, a husband and stuff. So that's also psychologically really difficult to get your head around. And, you know, it's just a horrible situation to be in. But, yeah, turned to drink again, started drinking again, which wasn't good. I had a bit of time off work, but then forced myself to go back to work after about 3 months and just try and sort my head out. And it was, that's where the It's Okay project kind of all happened as well. So started the It's Okay project, not for profit, where we were making. So it's a not for profit company, and we make zines, which are like little magazines at A5, but they've just got loads of really cool creative artwork, poetry, whatever in there. And the idea is that we kind of give this message across that creativity supports our mental well-being. What we don't want it to be was a load of images related to mental health, because they could get quite dark. People send you loads of pictures of paintings of people crying. And you're just like, no, it's not what it's about. It's about celebrating all these creative things and inspiring somebody to maybe pick up a pen, write a poem, a song, or create some artwork. Because I know at that point when we were in this world of grief, I couldn't make any art at all. My brain couldn't even function. I wasn't on that level. I couldn't produce anything. And it was really natural how it happened. I just found this way of collecting other people's creative work and harnessing it and, you know, putting it in a little magazine. And that's what.
And who's happened. That magazine pointed to? Anyone or?
Anyone, yeah. But we've had a bit of difficulty at the minute just surviving financially. So it's actually really hard to run a business. So, you know, our magazines were never supposed to be profitable. You know, they helped us get by a little bit, but, you know, then the accountants jump on and they want paying and da-da-da-da and websites and whatever. So we're actually closing it as a financial business soon. And what that means is it's still going to be there, it's still going to survive, but it relieves all this stress off us to make enough money to survive. And we're just going to turn it into an online thing. So, like, we could still make a magazine, and then just have the pages on the website. It just seems the easiest thing to do at the minute, so it's not affecting us, because it was becoming really difficult. So we're just kind of changing it into something else now that isn't, money is just out the question, because it's not about that. You don't want to be thinking about money. Yeah. It's not that sort of thing.
Well, the creativity, everyone knows it's a therapy anyway, no matter whether you're doing a fine art painting or writing, we're all fucked on a bit of paper. Even if you're not looking as art as a therapy, what it does do, that little bit of concentration while you're creating, takes you out of your mental environment and puts you puts you somewhere else.
And it's funny, I was thinking the other day when I first came across you art-wise, and I was thinking, oh, when was it? And it was actually at the Jealous Gallery, Katie Piper exhibition you did, because I was interning for Jealous Gallery and I was serving the drinks that night.
Oh, you're joking?
Which
one was it? Face Value what?
It was it the second one? Two.
That was my first one at Jealous, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it was then. And I met somebody whose Instagram handle is I Dream of Colour. He was fascinating.
Right, James Gray.
Me and him got on pretty well. Oh, I thought the exhibition was really inspiring. I loved it. I thought it was great. It was a great concept. I love the two people kind of coming together to make some one. Oh, it was just brilliant.
And not knowing what each other was. And yeah, it was a good, I'm aware it was a good thing, but.
Yeah.
And if you weren't an artist, what would you like to be?
Wow, God, that's a question, isn't it? A stay-at-home wife.
What, in your middle class?
That's it, a middle-class house, sipping wine during the afternoon, and then driving off in my Range Rover to collect the kids. Nah, that's not my life. I'd like to work in the countryside. That'd be nice, like a farm or, something. I get bored, and I think that's why I turn to art as well. I have to be doing something with my hands.
Going back to
I have to be
villages,
making.
about taking a bit of urban creativity into the village life. So it's like the full
Oh.
circle, you know?
Yeah, I like
Going from
that. I
village
like
to village, like I go from prison to try and sprinkle on a little bit of creativity, you know?
It's funny, you don't think about these things until you have these conversations. It's not often you get asked the question, hold on a minute, who are you? What's your artwork about? How did it start? And you're like, oh, right. You
No,
know,
but then
it's
what it
not often you have
does,
that conversation.
this is what I've realized doing these. And I see an artist as being on a train track, you know, and it doesn't deviate from that destination. Occasionally, when you have conversations, not like this, but when you have conversations with other people who make you think about where you're going, all of a sudden that train track has a little siding where you can sort of pull over, stop, reflect and go, hold on, I could just take a little fucking angle off here, and then you go down this new line, you know, a new path, and other ideas come into your mind.
I
And
definitely feel like that's happened recently for me, for sure. I don't know where that other track is going,
no,
but it's definitely.
it's exciting though, isn't it?
It's exciting. I definitely feel like I've stepped up a gear
Yeah.
and maturing with my art. I do
Yeah.
feel like I'm maturing with my art for sure.
And do you think that is more that you're starting to deal with your grief and your anger? Because they're very probably combined.
Yeah, and it's I'd say just understanding it as
Yeah.
well. At the time you're grieving and there's all the shit going on, you kind of like, yeah, it's because someone's died and it's real shit. Of course I feel like this. But then, it changes. Grief changes over time. It's
Yeah.
actually a really interesting thing that happens when, especially when, you love that person so much. It's the more love you have for that person, the more intense it is. And it manifests and it changes over times and experiences are different. So I skateboard and that after when I was grieving, I found it really hard to go to the skate park because my brain just couldn't comprehend with that environment. It
Yeah, yeah.
didn't feel safe anymore. It didn't feel like a safe place of what it used to be. It changed and it's like, wow. How something like losing somebody can impact how a space relates to you. Like, it's
Yeah.
mad.
And the thing is with grief, I'm not a religious person, but if they were looking down and knew that you was living 80% of your waking life being miserable because of their loss, that would make them as miserable. You know, it just needs that little something to find to celebrate their loss or celebrate their being. Are you in a better place now?
I'd say so, yeah, for sure. For sure. More positive. And maybe I can implement this with the anger that I feel about other things. Maybe I could be like, yay, go in angry, come out happy. You see, I've done it with grief.
Or even meet it halfway and just change your anger for frustration.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think it is changing for sure.
Sarah, how can anyone find what you're doing, be it website or social media?
So website is sarahprinsloo.co.uk. Sarah's spelt without a H. Not sure why. My mum says it's the Italian way, but I'm not sure if
Ah, see,
I believe
I was always told the Sarah with the H was a bit more refined.
Okay, got you.
Birth, it's your mum's fault you've got this attitude for not putting a fucking H at the end of your name.
Oh, that's what it all stems down to. I finally figured it out. and Instagram is Sarah Prinsley. Wow. And I've got an exhibition coming up soon as well in Barnsley at the Cooper Gallery. One of my paintings is up for the Cooper Prize. Yeah, so that's October, 27th of October. And the exhibition is actually up for 6 months. So it's up till April 24th.
Brilliant. And the It's Okay zine, how can anyone find that?
Instagram is It's Okay Proj, spelled OKAY, and Proj is PROJ. And itsokayproject.co.uk is our website.
Brilliant. Sarah, all the very best.
You're an absolute diamond.
All
right, then. Take it easy. Enjoy
your
Sunday. See you later. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. It's a podcast that's produced with the help of the listener. And if you like what you've heard and you think you might be able to give a little support, there's two ways in which you can do it. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile, you'll find a Linktree drop-down box. And in that box, you'll find two links. One is called Buy Us a Coffee, and it's pretty much that. You can make a one-off payment, the price of a cup of coffee. Or, if you're able and want to do it more long-term, you can become a Ministry of Arts Patreon, where you can sign up to support us on a monthly basis. And 100% of your support goes back into the podcast. And if you're not able to do that, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. But we would urge you to follow us on your socials and show us a bit of love that way. Either way, thanks for listening and see you next time. Ta-da.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.